This is Bootstrapped Web, episode 95. Back at it, Jordan. How's it going?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Nice to speak with you again. And your new location once again. I'm still in Miami. You are now down south in the sun along with me.
Yeah, down in Austin. We're here. We're here in Austin now through the end of December. So we're actually heading out January 1st. We kind of shifted our travel plans around a little bit. So we're here in Austin for a shorter period of time. Last week we had kind of a whirlwind tour driving down from North Carolina where we were for a few months, and then we did a quick stop through New Orleans and a couple short stops in between there, and stayed in Galveston, Texas, which was interesting. On the beach there, it was kind of cool. And then we got here in Austin. Oh, and we did two nights in San Antonio at an Airbnb there, and then we got to Austin.
Very nice. And I think I may as well just apologize ahead of time, because the Wi-Fi in Miami hates me, and I hate it. So we might have some interruptions.
Yeah, cool, that's, man. You know, when I set out on this trip, people were always saying like, "Oh man, internet is going to be such a challenge as you travel around." And for whatever reason, I'm an idiot, and I thought that, these days internet, like, how hard can it be to get a decent connection somewhere? And that is not the case. I mean, Airbnbs, HomeAways, you know, coffee shops, it's just not reliable. You gotta, you know, it's, and even though they advertise it as, you know, this place has Wi-Fi, it's not like it is at home, you know? So, but luckily this one where I'm at today in Austin is actually not so bad. So
yeah, I've gotten into tethering on my cell phone and just blowing through my Verizon plan.
Oh,
that's my fallback.
Yeah, that's same here. And we've gone over our plan like two or three times in a month, you know, pretty often now. So it's, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Cool, man. So we've got a good episode for today. Episodes.
Yeah, as you're giving me a tour of your co-working space there, you're walking around.
that was me nonchalantly trying to get better Wi-Fi in the conference room and then getting kicked out. No big.
Cool. Yeah, so today's an update episode. Let's get right into it. What's new with you on your end?
The emotional roller coaster continues. It's accelerated the pace at which things go from amazing to horrible. So I think that's like the theme of the past few weeks for me. And we were doing our daily stand-up with you know, myself and Brian and Rock, and just kind of going over our things. And we were looking at our KPIs, right? What we focus on is how many free trials and how many launched campaigns. And we were talking about one week ago, I was like high on heroin on this business. We had the best few days we'd ever have. We launched a new integration, the most trials ever, the most launched in a day, everything amazing. And I remember how freaking I was walking on clouds. And it is 1 week later, and the past few days I have been so unhappy. So just look back, it used to be like that, you know, more than 1 week, but it's compressed. But I'm trying to acknowledge it. And
well, what happened? Did something change in the last week?
That's the thing. Nothing actually changed. It's just that you get into this mental rut. And for me, what it's been lately is productivity. So we're making adjustments internally, because remember, we've talked about when marketing is ahead of product and then when product is ahead of marketing. So right now, it's switched. Marketing was too far ahead of product, and we had some technical issues. We needed to get that sorted out. That's now sorted out. So now product is ahead of marketing. So I feel behind, because that's my area. And not only do I feel behind, but because product jumped ahead and we got a few new integrations done, I'm overwhelmed. We've had more free trials in the past 30 days than we've ever, by like double, which is awesome. But I am responsible almost solely for all customer interaction. And so there's a list of super important things I need to do, and I can't get to it because I just spend a lot of time. I do from onboarding to customer support to converting people to sales conversations to marketing plans and advertising. It's just too much. So we're starting to – it used to be I will block for you guys. I will take all the incoming fire because you need to handle product. If that doesn't get fixed, then nothing works. And now it's switching. So what happened was Monday and Tuesday this week, I got into work on Monday. I look at my inbox. It's like 113 emails. Help Scout has 16 tickets in it. And Intercom has like 9 chats. And I'm like, guys, this is not cool. I'm not going to be able to do anything for an entire day when I have these priorities. So I think that's what put me in a rut of like, how am I even going to get this done? How are we going to move faster? And you get into like this hopeless thing. And then you start talking to your team and you get it off your chest. You start to feel better. A few things fall into place. Someone signs up for $250 a month. Someone 10 minutes ago just signed up for our first annual plan, our first annual customer paying upfront for annual. So it's like, okay. And I knew it was going to happen. On Monday, I was like in the darkness. And I knew by Friday, when I walk out of work on Friday, I'm going to feel good. So just go through.
It's amazing, that roller coaster. The same exact thing happened to me. I mean, I guess it continuously happens to me, but I definitely remember, I think you and I were talking about this a few weeks ago, where it's like, you get a couple of new customers sign up in a span of a couple of days, and then a few bad days, different, like a writer quits or something happens, and it's like everything, goes back to shit. But then, when you look back on the month as a whole, you're like, actually the numbers are looking pretty good. And when that's what always happens to me, like the day in, day out can be kind of a grind or kind of, frustrating or exciting or it's a roller coaster. But that's why I love the first of the month, because that's when I get to just look at it from a macro perspective and see, okay, things are actually trending in the right direction. We can calm down a little bit here.
Right. And this first of the month coming up is the big one. That's the January one.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
Kind of like, fresh start, new habits, new everything.
Yeah. And next week's episode, we're going to get into all of our goals and thoughts for looking back in 2015 and getting into 2016. So looking forward to that.
Right. How to take advantage of that opportunity to kind of look back and look forward at the same time. Besides that, the other thing that I wanted to share was something, speaking of productivity, I have found it easier to not be so hard on myself about shortcomings and just kind of go with it. And instead of trying to change my nature, but kind of going with my nature. So Ben sent me a blog post from Dan Martell talking about like mindset changes and mind hacks. I'm trying to remember the right terminology. Anyway, just for like time management, productivity. And one of the things that he wrote about there is something that I do without noticing that it's like a tactic. And for me, when I work with someone in real time, when Ben and I jump on Skype and we work together at the same time for half an hour, I am so unbelievably productive, because I don't know what it is, what the nature of it is. If it's performing for someone or the social pressure or just saying, hey, let's write this, this homepage copy together. And so you work on the imagery and I'll work on the copy. And then it's like, hey, they're doing whatever the dynamic is.
I guess
is.
It's like the accountability of like working in real time. Like we need to get something done by the end of this hour. So.
Right. So let's do it. Cause we're here to do it. So let's do it. It removes all distractions. So that works for me. So I'm just doing that more. So when something becomes really important, I make it, is it important enough to take up double the time? My hour plus Ben's hour.
How does that style of working flow with Ben's style and everyone else on your team?
They would prefer not to have it that way, but they can acknowledge Jordan sending out the email to all of our paying customers saying, hey, here's the offer for the annual plan. That's actually important enough for the business for Ben to hang out with Jordan on Skype for half an hour while he writes that email. It's not like Ben doesn't do any work and just watches me. He's kind of focused on it also and giving me feedback and kind of doing other stuff on the side. But we are there and he's present for me saying, okay, here's what I got. Check it out. Here's what I have. Check it out. Here's what I have. Check it out. Okay, I'm sending. Sent. And then it's done. Very cool. If it's worth it, I've been elevating things like that.
Very cool.
Yep. And that's it. The last thing on my end is something that I've been kind of dealing with. I've never been in a team of three people, not in this way. I've worked with my brothers. That was three of us, but the brotherly thing is just like a different story.
And it's also remote.
I've worked by myself a lot. I've worked with and I've also worked with like contractors that I pay. Right, that's a different relationship. But now we have three team members that each kind of own their own domain. And what I have been struggling with lately is management, to manage by consensus or decree. So I've had a lot of like gut feelings about where to go next and when market and potential product opportunities and where to take Carthook and how to make it more unique and differentiated. And it's like you need buy-in from the team, but you can't do it all by consensus because then it just kind of ends up in the middle of whatever the opinions are. So that's something I think will increase in importance in the first quarter of 2016, because we're looking at the market and saying, how do we make our product more differentiated? And anytime you do that, you're it's scary territory. Are you going to add features? Are you going to change direction? Are you going to niche down? So making those decisions, one person with buy-in versus three people consensus. So that's been a tricky thing the past like 2 weeks.
Mm. Yeah, it's tough because all of you are responsible for the big picture, but it seems like you're a little bit more on the big picture side of things, and the other guys are kind of more in the technical, not like just like building out the product on a day-to-day basis.
Right, but product management too.
So yeah, and like product roadmap, I guess. But
right.
But even beyond the product roadmap, there's even, okay, well, what's the strategy behind this roadmap? You know.
Right. It's more about what the market would react to, and that I am best positioned because I talk to people all day. I used to run e-commerce business and all that. But then when you have someone smart and experienced saying this is a dangerous path for a product to go in because I've seen in this situation and that situation where this happens and this might happen, it might be better to go a different approach. Then you're faced with, is it my call? Do I need everyone on board? Should we have everyone on board? Should it go by gut feel? How do we? So lately, it's been a lot of that, and like, how do you validate? How do you get buy-in? And it shouldn't just be it's my opinion because I'm smart, and therefore you must listen to me. It's like, okay, what if we just did this to a limited extent and then talk to 10 people? You know, so I've been like doing screenshots of people's emails and reactions to what I email them, and I post that in a Slack channel. That like for product.
Do you record any of your calls with customers so that the team can listen?
I don't record. No, I regurgitate. You know, I give feedback after a phone call, which is a little dangerous because it's colored through my bias. I like the emails I point to as less bias. Like, yes, they're reacting to what I say, but I also make sure to include in the screenshot what I said to them in the email and then what their reaction is. So you can kind of see, look at the way I phrased it and look at the way they responded.
Cool.
Yep. All right. So that's my my update on my stuff.
Cool, man. Well, let's see. As I said, I'm in Austin right now. I don't know when this episode goes out. I think it goes out next week. So I'll still be here in Austin for a couple more days. If any of you listening are in Austin, want to grab a beer or something, hit me up on Twitter. I'll be here through January 1st, and that's the day that we head out. After that, we head out to San Francisco, and I'll be in San Fran for about 11 nights in the middle of January.
Is that new?
We were going to hit San Francisco in the original plan, but we shifted around. So after San Francisco, instead of going north, we're going to kind of cut out the Northwest, unfortunately. And from there, we're going to head to Colorado. And we're going to spend the whole month of February in Colorado. And then from there, we're heading back to Connecticut.
So, okay. All right. That's your loop.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So my update for this month, we're right in the middle of December. So my focus, my big goal for the month of December is to update the productized course. So I've got a whole list of new lessons that I want to add to it, you know, incorporating stuff that I've been learning in audience ops. I have a number of new case studies, some that I've already recorded, a few that I plan to record. Some of them are with actual productized students who've done pretty awesome things this year, and as well as other business owners. So those will be added to the course, adding a bunch of new templates and worksheets and everything. So I'm making a whole bunch of updates there. I'm also planning on releasing a whole line of new free content to help support the Productize course. So my goal for this month is to compress all of that production work on Productize into December, but really into these 2 weeks while I'm here in Austin, so that I can kind of get that stuff done, put it in place, build the email automation systems and everything, so that it's basically all queued up for most of 2016, and then I can get right back to work on audience ops. So you're
seeing the end of December as like an opportunity. Like I don't have to focus on audience ops because no one's going to, I assume most people are not going to sign up for a service like audience ops in the end of December. So you almost have like a few weeks of opportunity to focus on projects.
Well, we have, once I get into the audience ops updates, I mean, we have been growing, and that's what's been, it's a good problem to have, I guess, but that's what's been making this difficult, is that I'm trying to focus on productize. And really this whole productize update was something that I wanted to do earlier in the year. And it's like, I've been pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. But the truth is, productize has been doing pretty well this year. It continues to sell, continues to grow, and it justifies me putting in time to come out with like a productize 2.0, which I really want to do. So I'm putting off a few things in audience ops in terms of like building out new stuff in audience ops. I'm not doing any of that in December. I'm focusing that effort on productize. As I said, audience ops is growing. It's actually growing pretty fast. I did all this work around sales and marketing for audience ops back in October and November. And a lot of it is kind of like automated stuff. And a lot of that is now starting to return in kind of a big way in December. So the flow of leads is doubled, if not tripled at this point. We've got a whole line of new signups coming through. And like the week after Thanksgiving, it's like, I think 4 clients kind of pulled the trigger to get started. So they were waiting for that, you know, at like last day of November to start going, which is great. And you know, the client base is growing significantly, and we're really attracting the right type of clients, which I'm really happy about. You know, software companies, SaaS companies, especially those with larger audiences, and they've kind of established somewhat of a brand name, but they're looking for, you know, extra power and extra resources into content. That's really kind of what we're shooting for in terms of our ideal client. And so the big challenge has become the team, growing the writing team. I'm starting to realize, like, now that we have a pretty strong pipeline of leads and sales coming through, I'm realizing that the big challenge is not going to be so much getting enough leads and getting enough sales. It's mostly going to be about getting enough writers who can take on enough clients for each writer. That's number one. But then the other challenge is finding writers with the right background, the right knowledge space and experience, you know, specifically because we're working with a lot of technical software companies. We're also working with a lot of web development agencies and user experience agencies and that sort of thing. So I'm kind of seeking writers who have also done work in web design or web development or user experience, but they also happen to write as well. And I know that there are actually quite a few writers in that space. I mean, I kind of consider myself to be one of those. I mean, I don't do actual writing for audience ops, but I have been able to attract a couple of new writers in the past week or two who have that mix of technical design as well as like business and marketing know-how, but they're also great writers and they do that as a service as well. So, I mean, if anybody's listening to this, I'm constantly on the lookout for that sort of writing talent. So if you're at all interested, we do have an application form on the site, but if you just, you know, tweet at me at Cast Jam, you know, that's a really great way to kind of get your name to the top of the list. Cause I do have a long list of applicants, but I'm really working hard at sifting through and finding people with that exact experience. And at this point, at this rate, I'm really looking to kind of bring on at least one or two writers every single month in order to allow for the sales and marketing to remain open, you know, without having to shut that down.
Right. So, that's actually your bottleneck.
Yeah.
Because you have to keep the quality up.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can't just hire anyone or outsource everything that's interesting.
Yeah. And so, I mean, but it's been good. You know, I've been able to grow a really great team so far. The people that we have on the team are awesome. And, you know, I'm just really happy with how all of that is going. I mean, as I said, we actually closed a lot more sales than I expected to in December. I thought that December would be a pretty quiet month, and that's kind of why I started to focus on productize. I mean, I would expect it to slow down as we get into the end of December, as we get, you know, into Christmas and New Year's. but I'm just trying to make sure that we have the pieces in place to hit the ground running in January too.
Interesting. And is it starting to grow out from your network, right? That would obviously make sense as the first layer, but then it would be very encouraging if it wasn't just based on like trust and knowing you ahead of time. If it starts to attract strangers that, you know, that have very little exposure to you, that would be very,
absolutely,
that would make me optimistic.
That's exactly why, actually I had that as a note here. That's exactly why I'm really happy with how things are going, because we have kind of crossed that threshold now where most of the leads that I'm talking to now, I'll still get one or two who I've met in person or I know they come from my network, but now most of them are people who I have not known before. They came either through a referral, you know, maybe somebody in their network kind of follows my stuff. So that's indirect, somewhat related to my network, but we have actually signed a couple of clients now who came from like a cold email that I sent, you know, or finding our content that we've been publishing or our new email course that we just released. So that stuff is starting to come through. And it's also interesting because I'm still the one doing all the sales calls myself. And that's in a way kind of a bottleneck, especially while I'm traveling. It's kind of hard to schedule all these things in. But I think at this early stage, I still enjoy doing the sales. I think it's important. I mean, as always, you know, sales calls are easy when it's a friend, you know, when you're talking to someone you know. But now I'm doing more and more calls with people I'm meeting for the first time. I'm learning, you know, how to overcome certain objections, but how to speak to certain, really just how to ask the right questions and how to learn about people and understand what's important to know about them. So I'm kind of learning those things and getting the ins and outs, and I think I'm getting a little bit better with that.
Is it structured? How structured do you have your, I don't know if you call it a demo, it's more of a consultation.
It's not too structured right now, to be honest. I probably could do a better job. I don't have like a natural sales technique with this. It's something that I'm trying to get better at. I did come out with a new PDF that you can get right on the homepage of Audience House, which is like a collection of sample articles that we've published for other clients. That's kind of a common question that comes up, is like, can I see some samples? And here's a bunch of samples. So there's that. And I mean, I kind of answer a lot of the common questions, but part of the thing about this productized service is that it's really all, for the most part, laid out on the homepage, pricing and everything. There are a few details that I haven't communicated everything on the homepage, like what we're doing when it comes to content promotion and whatnot. So I'll kind of go into those details and how we will like create the content upgrade on all the articles and things like that. So I'll kind of explain that to new leads. But my approach to doing sales calls has always been just to ask a lot of questions. You know, really, I just want to learn as much as I can about you, what your situation is, what you're looking ahead to doing, what your goals are, and see if we can even help in any way, you know.
Yeah, there's an article I came across on First Round, you know, that VC company. They have an amazing, amazing blog. And the guy from Talent Bin, the co-founder of Talent Bin, Peter Kazanji, he wrote an article really, really in depth about their sales process, their cold email, exact verbiage, everything, their templates, and then also how they ran demos. So I'll put a link in. Yes, really, really good. It made me kind of question a lot of things that I hold as common wisdom of, like, be really short and to the point in your email. These guys, super long, detailed everything. And it also kind of it jives with the email templates that people have sent me from our competitors. So it was a bigger funded competitor that we kind of keep an eye on. You know, my customers have sent me, hey, this guy's emailing me, I figured you'd want to see. I couldn't believe the level of detail they were going into in email 3 and email 4 of a cold email sequence that the person hasn't responded to, but they're just giving the information. Speaking of that, I want to ask you your opinion. You were mentioning that when you get into a sales call, some of the things have not been communicated on the site. Things like how you do content promotion after something gets published, right? So what's your opinion on that? We are redoing or adding, whatever you want to call it, updating our marketing site now. And half of me wants to just include all the information, and half of me just wants to include a lot of it, but not quite every single detail for fear of it being overkill. And also for, you know, to have some things be like, wait a minute, I like this, I want this, but I want to know how this works. And then that can pull you into doing a demo, getting in touch. So I'm unsure of how to approach that.
I think that you're right on the latter, and I think that's what I found with Audience House, to be honest. Now that you voiced it in that way, I mean, the homepage of Audience Ops is the same homepage that we've had since day one. Like, that's basically the sales page that I created before we had any clients and before we even really learned anything about this market, except for what I had when I launched. And so I just haven't gotten around to like rewriting any of the copy or changing anything on that. And it's worked fairly well, and I really had no reason to change it up, and at least not yet. And what I found, and so over the last few months, we haven't changed things drastically, but we did add a few additional benefits to what we do. Content upgrades. I mean, that's kind of touched on the homepage, but like we'll go onto Quora and answer questions for as the client, and our writers will write answers and link back to content that we've published. We'll like syndicate their articles to Medium, and we'll do all these different things. We do like email drip automation sequences for clients and that sort of stuff. So, and we help people migrate over to Drip and all this. And like, not all that is really hashed out on our homepage. What I'm finding now is like, okay, they read the homepage, they request the consultation. They're already basically on board with the core concept. Like they're looking to outsource the writing for their content. But then once we start talking about it, and once I start talking about these or explaining these other benefits specifically that we're focused on building their email list and the content promotion and content upgrades, then it becomes like, oh, I didn't even realize you guys did that. That's like icing on the cake, because they're already on board because they see the price, they see what's included, and that alone was enough to request the consultation.
Right. And now you've given them the goods. Yes.
Yeah, now, now it's like something extra that doesn't cost anything extra. You know, it's just like we include it. I've heard that happen a couple times, and like what I've been doing for most leads is we actually still send proposals. We use Nusi to create our proposals and send them out. And it's a productized service, so it's like super standardized. We've got like a template, and I think I talked about on a previous episode, my VA sets up the proposal using one of our templates and sends it out. And but lately, a lot of these leads, I mean, it's signing up on the first call. You know, forget the proposal. Let's just, you know, sign you right up. If they're ready to go, they're ready to go. And I think that comes down to they're already educated before we even get on the call. It's just a matter of, you know, getting a few questions answered and getting comfortable with it.
So what's the normal process? Someone hits your site, requests a demo, requests a consultation, talks to you, or downloads something, looks through your site, gets an email course. Like what?
Well, we just recently put like the email course in place, and we just recently put that sample articles in place, which also gets them into the email list. So that sequence is just beginning to play out. So a lot of the leads will come through that first, but historically, before that stuff was launched, most of it basically what happens is somebody requests a consultation right on the homepage. The form is there. That comes straight to me. I reply. Here's my Calendly link. Let's talk sometime this week or next week. We talk. And then typically what happens is by the next day, I'll send them the proposal link and a link to a special page on our site created just for them with the buy button that gets them subscribed in Stripe. And then they'll follow that link to sign up, or I'll follow up with an email a week later, and I'll kind of follow up every single week for probably 3 or 4 weeks until it's not happening. Or in the case of some recent clients, like we didn't even do the proposal. I just signed them up right on the first call over the phone. But that's basically how it happens. And then once they sign up, I just pass them right over to my team. My project manager does the kickoff call, and they kind of get rolling from there.
Very nice, man. Very nice.
It's good. You know, I gotta be, I mean, it sounds good on the surface, but there are things that I'm really challenged
delivery,
with.
Delivery, man. Delivery. It's a service.
Yeah, it is a service. I mean, luckily it's not me doing the daily delivery of the stuff. You know, I've got the project managers in place doing a lot of the client communication, got a great team of writers, but man, this I'm really challenged with making sure that we have enough capacity to keep growing the client list. So that means I find myself constantly going back into my jobs email account and sifting through applications and running interviews with writers. And so like, that's something that I'm going to need to kind of systematize at some point. And then the other thing that I'm just, is constantly on my mind now is running a remote team. And the fact that we're remote is not new to me. I've been remote basically my whole time doing business on the web, but this is definitely the biggest team that I've managed yet. I think we have something like 12 people total in like 4 different continents. I mean, mostly across the US, but you know, everywhere. And so I'm trying to figure out how to keep a strong work culture, and even like beyond just Slack. I mean, obviously a lot of that happens in Slack, but I'm trying to, and I'm also trying to keep my finger on the pulse of where everybody's at. Like you were saying, how you're working with partners who are kind of on equal footing, and you all kind of own your own domain. I'm a little bit challenged with not having that situation. And I am the sole owner or the sole quote unquote boss, but and that makes it tough to get an accurate read on everybody sometimes.
Yeah. You know, I hear that. I have difficulty with it among 3 people who talk multiple times a day and have a stand up every day. So I can imagine as things get more spread out and it's not business partners, yeah, it's a big challenge, but that sounds to be like your challenge for 2016. It's, you know, management, hiring, systems.
Yeah.
Yep. Good, man. All right, cool. So what do you think? We cut it as our update. Let everyone get back to work. We're back to listen to music.
Yes, sir. So we'll be back to it. Next week, we're going to talk about all about goals. Look back on 2015. We'll look ahead to 2016. And
I'm a little scared. I'm a little scared.
Me too. As always, and by the way, we received some tweets from you guys about some sites and businesses that we'll review on an upcoming episode in the next couple of weeks. So looking forward to that. And why don't you guys, I guess we'll get into the next episode, but, you know, tweet us, you know, what your goals are for 2016. Love to hear what you guys are working on.
Yeah. Make it public. Make it a little bit more accountable.
Yep.
All right. Cool, Brian.
Better.
Cheers.
Cheers.